Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, welcome to the holiday issue of the holiday episode of the Tuesday Live Show. This is a show I do every Tuesday where I answer questions that are submitted and just ramble about things I want to ramble about. And today I have a few things I kind of want to talk about. A lot's happened the past week or so, and so there's some things I want to talk about beyond answering questions. If you have questions during the show, throw them in the comments. I love answering those questions. Also, if you're listening to this as a podcast, this is available as a podcast. You can listen to the audio. I'm going to do my best to make the audio not terrible. But it's really intended to be a live YouTube show, but you can find the audio of this as a podcast on Spotify and I think Apple Podcasts and pretty much everywhere. So we're going to get started, and the first thing I'll do is answer the questions that were submitted during the week. And the first one has to do with Groover deodorizers. I just purchased the Subway Fab Riverbank toilet system, and I was wondering if what type of deodorizers are best, especially for the longer trips. I'm sure there's a lot of people that have a lot of opinions about this. I have what I think is the answer. And first of all, the Subway Riverbank toilet, I think, is easily the best. We use them hard. We don't take that good care of them. And they last, and they're solid, and they're plastic, and they're affordable. For every reason, I just don't see why that is not the only option for everybody. There may be some other reason, but they're great. They're great toilets. For deodorizing them, there's this thing that I use called RTB 780, and I just happen to have the card for it. I always have it here on my desk so I don't forget. It's this stuff, RTB 780, portable toilet and holding tank treatment. This is what we use. I just leave it here at my desk and I Google it every time I need it. So maybe we can go to Google right now, I think, and let's go to Google right now. I'll lose this thing I'm working on, but it's okay. So I had this bill up I want to talk about, but I'll find it later. So RTB 780 deodorizer. Let me see if I Google this. From Microbiologic. Yep. This is what we use. It's just like this little, you buy a pack of it like this, 6 packets for $20. You throw a packet in the bottom of the toilet, put a little bit of water in there, and it does a really good job. That's all I got to do. It's not that hard. And I really believe in this stuff. We buy a lot of it and use it on our trips. And it's solid. I'm not sure how I found it, who told me about it first. But again, I always forget. When I go to buy more, I always forget who makes it. And I have to Google it for like an hour to find it. And that's why I leave this thing on my desk. So hopefully that answers that question. And then let's go on to the next one. If anybody has other things to add, throw them in the comments. I've used... In the past, we've used dry bleach, like powder bleach, which it turns out is a bad idea because it messes with septic systems. When you put bleach into a septic system, that's really hard on it. And so when you go clean it and empty it out, it's not good. And I've used a lot of other things, and this is the best. Okay, the ice dilemma. With the advent of roto-molded coolers, ice retention has become much easier. Last year, I was able to keep cube ice for about 4.5 days of a 6-day trip in 100-plus degrees in a cooler that was pre-cooled. Sweet. Pre-cooled means you put the cooler in a freezer, hopefully. Like, if the cooler starts off at 100 degrees and you add ice to it, it takes energy to cool the cooler down. So it helps to pre-cool the cooler. I'm considering – and first of all, 4.5 days of a 6-day trip, we go 6 days and have ice at the end of 6 days. So you should just do is put more ice in there. Like, have more of your cooler filled up with ice. The ice should last all 6 days, especially in modern coolers. Like, we used to use really bad coolers, like old Rubbermaids, and we had to put even more ice in. These new coolers, the Yetis and all the derivations of them, the Icy Techs and the Canyons, they all work infinitely better than what we had, like, I don't know, 10 years ago. I'm considering sourcing dry ice for my next trip in those conditions. Any thoughts on using various types of cooling techniques to get the best and longest bang for the buck? I've never used dry ice on purpose. I think I've been on trips where it's been there. I feel like dry ice is a pain to get. It's a pain to used. There's some safety issue. I don't know exactly, but like you can't touch it, or I don't know. You gotta be careful with it. I'm a big fan of just using ice. Just buy ice. And so my tips and tricks would be put a lot of ice in there. It takes a bit of volume of your cooler, but that's the reality of it. Put a lot of ice in there and don't open and close your cooler all the time. Don't leave it open. Make sure it gets closed. That's pretty obvious. There's a question of drain or not to drain. And we did a bunch of studies a few years ago. The ice lasts longer. Well, when you let the cold water out, you're removing thermal mass. So it's harder to absorb heat. But when the ice is an ice bath, the heat transfers out of the cooler faster. So it's good to keep a little bit of water in the cooler. Like you don't want to just constantly drain it, but you also don't want it to be a bathtub. And there's a happy medium. So like I drain it once in a while, but maybe you leave a little bit of water in there. But I'm not fanatical about draining. You do like when you drain the water out all the time, you're getting rid of your thermal mass. And so it definitely lasts longer if you do sort of an in-between thing. When it's drain or not to drain, it's neither. It's kind of in between. That's really the answer. Also, like a thing that works really well is get a burlap sack and putting it in the river and then putting it on top. And that does as a conductive cooling, evaporative cooling. It cools. Yeah. I think it's called evaporative cooling. Anyway, I don't know the science behind it. It doesn't make any sense to me why it works, but it does. And I'm pretty good at science, and this one I don't understand. And so having burlap sacks and all of our coolers, you know, when it's hot out, especially 100 degrees, they constantly have this burlap sack that goes in the water, gets put on top. A cold burlap sack on top of a wet one will help keep your stuff cold. And then covering your cooler as well. Like we have Pocket pads, especially in camp, that go over the cooler. So instead of having like just the top of the cooler sit in the sun, have the burlap sack on there and then something else over the top of that, we found really helps. So I guess my answer is like, don't just sum this up. I wouldn't go dry ice personally. I mean, do whatever you want, it's your life, but I wouldn't do that. I would go with get the good coolers, use lots of ice, drain sometimes, don't drain other times. Maybe do like a half and half drain thing and cover it with a burlap sack, put something on top. That works really well. There's a few comments here. Oh, the other thing, I mean, these are like, those are all the things I just said were like just standard, easy to do. Advanced things are to pre-cool your cooler. If you have a cooler or a freezer you can put your cooler into and have it cold to start with, that's great. Have the food cold to start with, that's helpful. Also, if you can get your ice colder, that helps too. Like when you buy ice at the store, it's usually like 31 degrees. If you can buy 20 degree ice, that's obviously going to last longer. There's higher qualities of ice. When you buy ice from the store, though, they're not motivated to make it colder. They're just selling ice. Like if they make it 20 degrees, they don't make more money on the ice. So they're not going to sell you good ice. But if you can get your ice down colder, that's super sweet. If you have the room to make your own ice, the ice from a deep freeze lasts longer. Yeah, exactly. If you can lower the temperature of your ice, that's going to work sweet, better. Chris says, I found some very large silicone ice molds to make ice, block ice on Amazon that are made up for cold plunge pools. Huh. Interesting. Make your own ice again. And I mean, Amazon's amazing. Yep. That's a good idea. Sean, I bought a couple of metal steam tray containers. Yeah. You can make your own ice. If you have a freezer that like freezes things. Now, if you're going to make your ice at home and then drive for 2 days to the river, you know, in your coolers in the sun in the back of your truck, that may not make a difference than just buying it when you get there. You know, it depends. Okay, cool. Good answers. So let's see. I now want to go back. That's all the questions we have for this week. I want to go back to today's show, what we're going to talk about, and answer questions we're done with. I want to talk about the Explorer Act, about protections for the Owyhee River. And there's a video out there, 26 minutes and tapping, that I just want to talk about pretty quickly. So let's start with, let me see if I can find the Explorer Act. Let's start by talking about the Explorer Act. So there's this act that passed Congress last week called the Explorer Act. And it's something that I've been working on for, I think, 10 years. Somebody said 8, but it seems like longer. And I've been working on the version that helps out, the part of it that helps outfitting. I'm an outfitter. I own a rafting company. And it started off as the GO Act, and which became had another name for a while. GO stand for Guides and Outfitters, had another name, and then it became the SOAR Act, and the SOAR Act got put into the Explorer Act, and the Explorer Act has a bunch of other stuff in it. And I want to bring this act up just to, I'm going to share it here on the screen. Let's see if I can find it. There we go. This is the text of the act, and it's long. I mean, a lot of these acts are, but it's got a few different things in it. You can see, if you look here, Title I is Outdoor Recreation Infrastructure. It's just, there's some really good stuff about, like, let's prioritize recreation and infrastructure for recreation. And there's, like, subsections. One, a big part about gateway communities. Like, Salmon is a gateway community to Idaho. And so sometimes we need to do more to help support the gateway communities to recreation. Stanley, Idaho is a gateway community. You could say, like, I mean, I live in Hood River. That's a gateway community. And some of these communities need support. So there's some stuff for that. Broadband connectivity for national parks and I probably for recreation sites, which is important because for us on the Middle Fork, at Boundary Creek and Indian Creek, since all of our permits are online, they need connectivity. And we're starting to do Zoom calls with the rangers to do camps. And so having broadband at recreation sites has become really important. And then some stuff on parks. And there's a section, Title II part. There's like, I think each of these titles is a separate bill that got thrown into this. That's how I take it. Access for people with disabilities, stuff for military and veterans. And then Title III is the part that I've been working on, which was the GO Act, is now the Simplifying Outdoor Access for Recreation. And it's really like, there's just a lot of stuff in here that is very specific to outfitting. And I've seen people write comments about how, as private boaters, they're worried about the permit section of this. This isn't about individual like permits. There's nothing in here that's like, I just want to clear the air about what this is, because I'm seeing a lot of disinformation from private boaters about what's happening. The stuff in here makes our permitting process more efficient and for both us and for the agencies. And there's a lot of stuff in permits that's just like, there's gray area. It's not clear. It's sort of messy, and it's really hard to explain all of it. An example is that we're supposed to be reviewed every 5 years, and based on our use, we might get use taken away from our permits if we don't use it enough. Well, it was like sort of messy and complicated. It just simplified it. It just went from a messy formula to a very simple formula that makes sense. And there's just a lot of stuff like that in here. This isn't about taking private use away. This isn't about anything with private. Like, this isn't about permits to go on like the Middle Fork or the Rogue. It's about our special use permits. We have a special use permit to run commercial trips on the rivers we run. The same way the shuttle companies have special use permits. In the same way that some sort of event, like a whitewater race, has special use permits. If you want to try to do some sort of event on, let's say, the Clackamas River, like the Upper Clackamas Whitewater Festival, the permit to do that is really hard to get. And if you talk to people who have organized the festival, they can attest that the hardest part about the festival is probably working with the permitting agency. And for, I can tell you, doing permitting for a living, working with the government is the most difficult part of my job. And I guess a lot of the shuttle companies who have these permits to do shuttles might say the same thing. And so part of it is just the regulation and the gray area and uncertainty about getting these permits to do these things is messy. And this bill that passed just cleans a lot of stuff up. It's nothing like, if you read it, it's really hard to understand because it's like, take this out of here and put this in there. But it just cleans things up for us. There's nothing in here that I know of that based on my interpretation, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm not. There's nothing in here that's going to remove use for private boaters. It's not what this is about. This is about cleaning up permitting, which is good as a taxpayer. This is a more efficient government, a better run government. It helps my business. It helps the shuttle company's business. And it helps all these events and probably more things. And as a private boater, you should probably want your shuttle companies to be more efficient, better run, because it means they stay in business, which means we have shuttles, but also decreases the price of shuttles because they're doing less this paperwork. So that's my quick take. There's a lot of cool stuff in here. And if you read it, it's really hard to like parse it because they're just basically taking parts out of previous laws and replacing them with better language. That's just cleaner. And this has been debated. This is how the government works, like how Congress works. A lot of us are frustrated with Congress. Like Congress doesn't get anything done. Congress doesn't ever do anything. It's really good that they don't get a lot done, in my opinion, because a lot of the bills brought to them are not good. And so they have to say no to a lot of stuff. And they've been saying no to this for years. And then it's more stuff has been cleaned up and added. This has been debated by so many people for so many years to get to where it's at. And it's a good bill. And because it was so hard to get through Congress, it makes it a good bill that's really fair to everybody. And American Whitewater is behind it. There's a lot of stuff they believe in that's in here. You know, all the stakeholders were involved in this. Now, you may be like, well, I want more permits for the rogue. Yeah, then you could form a rogue private boater club and you could go to meetings and have input on things like this. Everybody else might be like, yeah, no, that doesn't make sense. And if you took this to Congress, they'd be like, yeah, that doesn't make sense. But the debate has happened and there's been so many people involved in this, and it had support on both the Republicans and Democrats. It had really great support, and it passed, I think, as its own bill, which is rare. Usually these things get shoved into a big package. This just passed as its own bill. So anyway, it's a pretty exciting thing. And the main point of bringing it up on the show is just to clear the air. Like a lot of people are saying, it's making permits better for outfitters. It's making our special use permit bureaucracy better. It doesn't mean that we get more permits or that private boaters get fewer permits. It's just cleaning up bureaucracy in our agency. So those are my thoughts on the Explorer Act. Again, I've been working on this for a long time. I've personally been to DC like 5 times to just, you know, one time just for this bill, and 4 other times where this bill was the most important thing we were talking about. So I mean, obviously I believe in it, and I'm pretty glad it passed. So that's that. Let's talk about the Oahu protections a little bit. Same thing. The Oahu, this has been going on for a long time. How do we protect the Oahu? The Oahu is a wild and scenic river, which gives it some protections, but wild and scenic river protection is fairly weak. It protects from dams, which is great. Like there won't be dams on the Oahu, but beyond that, it's not a lot of protection, not as much as everybody thinks. And we're not going to go into that, but what you really want is the land protected with ideally a wilderness designation. And that's something that like, I would like love to see the Oahu protected as wilderness. The rogue is half protected by wilderness. We still need to get the other half protected. That's a whole separate topic, but the rogue, the Middle Fork, the Chetco, the Illinois, all rivers I work on are all in wilderness. The only one I work on that's not wilderness is the Oahu River. And so of course I'd love to see that. And so in 2016, I went to D.C. for the Oahu separately to advocate for the National Monument. And through that whole process, and I talk about it in an op-ed I'm going to share with you all here in a second. Through that process, I learned that the National Monument protection is probably not the right protection for the Oahu. And I also learned that if you live in Portland and Bend or California, and you try to tell people who live in Eastern Oregon what to do with their land, it's going to cause some problems. It caused some problems. So in 2016, a lot of us who don't live down there tried to force a national monument on the people who live down there, and they got upset. Rightfully so. I learned a lot. Like I was like, wow, that does make sense. And so that's the point of legislation. Legislation is where you involve everybody. You write legislation, you ask the locals, you ask the conservation groups, you ask the outfitters, you then go to Congress, you have debates, you have the House and the Senate. Like, well, I didn't want it, but back then the congressperson, Walden, wasn't really for it. And so it didn't get very far. Now Representative Benz doesn't want to protect the area, so you have the House and the Senate, you know, having different versions of the bill. Senator Wyden and his staff have gone to Eastern Oregon, sat down with the stakeholders, said, what does it take? What do you guys need? We're gonna take some of your land and make it like restricted. We're gonna restrict your land. what do you think? And they're like, of course they're going to say, no, this is our backyard. Don't restrict our backyard. But if you say, hey, well, we love this place. We want to protect it. We'll restrict it, but we'll give you something that you need, some sort of reform. That's how things get done. And it is a compromise, but in this case, I feel like compromise is important. So I'm kind of going on a lot of tangents here, but it comes down to, like, I feel like congressional protection through wilderness is the right thing to do because it includes everybody, and we debate it and we come up with a really good bill. And like the Explore Act, this bill has been on the table for a long time, or some version of this bill, and we've been debating it and going back and forth. And Senator Wyden last Friday, I think, just a few days ago, got his bill to protect the Ohio passed through the Senate. Now it needs to go through the House. And when the National Monument, on the other hand, just takes the president to do. And so the president can do them by themselves, and you don't include everybody. And so by pushing the National Monument, we're really frustrating the locals. And we need the locals on board so we can get the support of Representative Bence, who represents them. And once you have Wyden and Bence working together, we can hopefully get legislation through. And so I feel like the National Monument push is setting us back in terms of protecting Hawaii. We didn't get Obama to do it. And the big reason was that Wyden wasn't supportive of it then because he believed in the wilderness. And right now there's a lot of nonprofits trying to push the National Monument again, which is making us slide backwards. It's making us lose trust with the people who live in the area. And we really need their support to get this passed in the House. Hopefully that all made sense. I sort of summed this up in a op-ed that I wrote. And so if anybody's interested, I'll bring it up here in a sec. I'm just going to throw it up. It's what I just sort of explained. When I wrote it, I was probably maybe a little more succinct than if I'm just talking about it. But I wrote this op-ed I published this morning that shared my thoughts and the difference between wilderness and national monuments, and why I think it's important to engage the people who live in the area before protecting their backyard. And I'll try to put a link in the show down below. I might forget. So if I do, I apologize. But you can also just Google, like, Zach Collier, Ohio River op-ed. Or I don't know. Go to the Idaho Capital Sun. You can find it. So, yeah, that's that. And then the last thing I want to do is just talk quickly about this 26 minutes